We pay an enormous price for society's taboo against talking about death and dying. Now, other societies around the world talk far more openly about the reality of death and the processes of dying and grieving, but we tend not to in this country. We're left to figure it out for ourselves, relying on doctors and funeral directors to tell us what to do once we're face to face with death. By breaking the silence, we set the foundation for making decisions about life and death and enable us to plan the kind of end-of-life ritual that would be appropriate for us. It also supports us in coping with the death of our loved ones. That's why today I'm pleased to welcome Paul Yarwood from Secure Haven Independent Funeral Homes. Welcome, Paul.
Welcome, Bob. Hello.
Yeah, nice to see you. Now, would you agree with all of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Now, you were with us last month here on Phoenix with Scott Ross, and as a result, we received a couple of questions from our listeners. So maybe we could start with those today.
Yes, please.
We had a question from Dennis Litchins. Thank you very much, Dennis. He said, as a regular listener, I'm grateful for you for inviting Paul Yarwood to engage with your community. I found his words reassuring and comforting, as my father is seriously ill. Please could you ask Paul if it's ever too early to engage with a funeral director? My father continues to defy medical expectations, and I'm reluctant to approach him about this topic as he continues to fight his illness. I realise there are two questions here, but I'd be grateful for Paul's advice as to when I should be finding a funeral director.
That's a very good question, actually. And hello, Dennis, if you're listening. First answer is no. It's actually never too early to discuss anything with a funeral director. In fact, from personal experience and dealing with families, that the earlier you can speak to us, the better, because the emotion at a time of loss is incredible. So to answer that question, if he has the time to speak to any funeral director, we're all here to listen and to give him the information he would need prior to that time.
Absolutely. It's far better to be prepared, isn't it? Because at the time of losing someone, your emotions are running riot, of course, and you're not always taking information in. And, you know, it's the worst possible time to be planning anything, really.
Very much so, Bobby.
Yeah. Okay, another question from Brian Marchant. Thank you, Brian. I'd like to thank you for allowing on air last week the funeral director. Very informative. I hope he comes back. If so, please can you put forward the following question. I'm not a religious person. Does this affect how I have a funeral service?
To answer that, absolutely. Again, there's no idea. Depending how religious you are, has no bearing really on the service that you provide for a loved one.
Right.
You can be absolutely a non-religious or a humanist, but if you are preparing a funeral for a loved one that's very religious, obviously that's perfectly okay to do so. So no, it's fine.
Right. Yes. I recently did go to a non-religious funeral, and it was conducted by a fella. I can't remember the title now. He wasn't a religious priest or anything like that.
Celebrant?
That's it, celebrant. Yeah, it was amazing. Mm. It was really, really nice. He spoke about the person who was deceased. He'd obviously done his research, and he just had a really good way about him, and the whole thing was a celebration of life.
Absolutely right, yes.
Yeah. Okay, now, we're all a bit, when it comes to actually losing someone, as I said earlier, we're kind of in a bit of a state. So we've got a few questions here to kind of anticipate some of the things you need to do when you lose someone close to you. So what's the first thing to do when a loved one dies, either at home, a care home, or a hospice or hospital?
This is a very good question, Bob, actually, because it is quite important, because we often get phone calls from people that have lost a loved one, and we're often the very first call that we may be receiving.
Yeah.
But it is actually important for people to understand that if someone does pass away at home, the first call to make would be to a doctor.
Right.
And that doctor would confirm the death, and at that point we can be contacted and can bring them into our care. With regard to a care home, the staff responsible would call the doctor, and again they can call us, or the family can call us, and we can bring them into our care.
Right.
And then slightly different now within the hospice. Again, the staff will confirm the death via a doctor. If it's going to be a cremation, the staff will organise the part one, which is important. It's a documentation that everyone has to have in our profession of a cremation for a medical certificate. And then again, we can bring the loved one back into our care. And finally, at the hospital, because their doctors are there, they will fill part one and two. And as of the cremation for medical certificate, and once that's all been completed, and only then can we bring them into our care. So it's a bit of a time difference in some
sure,
of those.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, isn't there?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So how does someone choose the right funeral director for their family, and how much does the average funeral cost these days?
I would say, first of all, for any families looking to choose a funeral director, is basically check the websites.
Yep.
Because most funeral directors, us included, have all the information provided. And before you even really integrate with us, find out exactly what facilities we've got. Have we got the mortuary facilities? It's very important right. for me, and when I lost my dad, to make sure dad was there. It was quite a key point for me, and that doesn't always happen. I think people need to realise that.
Right.
And with regard to the prices, the national average is around about $3,700 for okay. what we would call a usual ceremony. And once you add on the flowers and memorials nationwide, that can get up to about $7,000-$7,500.
Really?
But obviously, we try to keep our prices very keen and to make sure they're all transparent.
So. What would you say is the most sort of expensive part of all that?
It really could be the memorial,
because
that's once the funeral is all disbursements, really.
Yeah.
Know, depending on where you have the funeral is dependent on disbursements. But things like catering, memorial services afterwards,
yeah.
that's where the additional costs can kind of mount up. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Paul. So if my loved one dies at home, how soon do they need to be removed?
That's a good question, actually, because there is no real time. I mean,
right.
what they do is if a family, and a doctor's been, and we are able to go and collect the loved one into our care,
yeah.
there is no real time. I mean, there's no way we could pressurise a family to give up what's so priceless to them.
Yeah.
All we would do, if we knew that, we would explain to them the situation, and we'll make sure, if we heard prior to that information, how the family can deal with that, because there obviously is some stages we need to go through. But the answer to your question is there's no real time. There's no pressure yeah. anyway. We don't rush anyone.
No, good. I mean, from my experience at those times, you don't actually know what you're doing some of the time. You're kind of in this otherworldly place, and it's very difficult to make decisions at that time, and that's when probably we look to people like yourself to guide us. And things like you know, practical things like, is it okay for someone to wash and dress their loved one in their own clothes before they're removed?
Bob, the main important thing there is yes, you can do that, but it has to be after the doctor has confirmed
right.
the death of the loved one. So that can be done at home by the family if that's something they wish to do, which could be important to them. And obviously the next process is, if they wish, we can do that. Once the deceased comes into our care, we could take the clothes if they wish to have their own clothes on, and then we can wash and prepare them for them.
Right. I mean, you must have received some strange requests over the time you've been doing this, I would think. And obviously, you probably can't say specifically anything, but as I say, it's a funny time for people. And I don't know, can you give us an example of something that would sort of maybe raise eyebrows? I don't know.
Not so much raise eyebrows, Bob,
yeah.
I think, but we did have a family that came to us, and it was prior to their loved one passing.
Right.
So they were trying to take control of the situation, which
yeah,
was
good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
They were empowering themselves at that point.
Yeah.
And to them, it was extremely important that when it was their father passed away, that they could have dad there for a while. They
right.
they didn't want to lose that. So they asked how they would, what would happen, could they wash and prepare, and they dressed their dad, and I think he was there for a number of hours, and
right.
we explained the situation and how to do that, and it meant a lot to them, and
yeah.
it was a little bit of closure for them that we could offer them. Yes.
Lovely. Okay. Right, well, I've got a few more questions for you, but I thought we'd have a little bit of light relief now. I came across the top 10 overall funeral chart of 2016. Songs that have been requested for people's funerals, and in 2016 there are lots of songs in there that I'm sure you've come across regularly, really. Nat King Cole and Unforgettable, Abide With Me, I'm sure that is a regular favourite for people's funerals. But the number one, which I'm going to play now, is actually from Frank Sinatra, and it's My Way.
And now the end is near.
It was my way.
Frank Sinatra there and My Way. That's the number one requested song for people's funerals last year in 2016. Now, Paul, I guess we're moving on to the paperwork, really. How soon do you have to register a death? And do you need to make an appointment? And what information do I need to know or have with me if I'm registering a death?
Well, firstly, a death should be registered within 5 days.
Right. Yeah.
You make an appointment. Once you've got all your doctor's certification, then you make an appointment. You go and see them. It's normally about half an hour.
Okay.
And you take any details of address and anything with you so they can fill the forms out. And they will provide you with, if it's a cremation, a green form.
Okay.
And basically, if the only thing that would be different to that is if the death has been reported to the coroner, then you cannot register it until after the coroner's investigations are finished.
Okay, why would a coroner need to be involved?
Again, quite an emotive subject, it possibly shouldn't necessarily be. Really, it's standards where if the cause of death is unknown, if the death was unfortunately maybe violent or unnatural.
Okay, yeah.
And there are others, but more legal, possibly, things that may not go into right now. But one thing to really say is that if a coroner is involved, it's not necessarily something that's gone wrong. It's to protect everybody.
Yes, yeah.
Establish
the facts, I
absolutely
guess.
Right. Yeah, so that would be a cause, and then you just have to wait for the coroner's investigation to be finished. More often than not, they'll pass them back to the doctor.
Okay, all right. Now, as I say, there's a lot of paperwork. You have to send death certificates off to everybody, it seems, from my experience. So how many death certificates would you suggest that people need, and do you have to pay for them?
You do have to pay. The cost per copy is around about £4.50 you pay on the day.
Yep.
But obviously check with the registrars. Some actually don't accept cards, so you have to take money with you.
Oh, okay.
Something that's happened very recently.
Right.
Further copies could be purchased about £7 to £8 from the general register office. You probably need on average about 3, and that would go to the person administrating or executing the will, so they can then use those to be able to kind of get the money out to pass the situation. But 3's about right.
Right, okay, lovely. A question that's close to my own heart, really, from my own experience. If my loved one has to have a post-mortem, will I still be able to visit them in the Chapel of Rest?
Of course. It's a choice that we always offer to families.
Yeah.
And personally, for me, I was there when both my parents passed away.
Yeah.
And they were very, very different experiences. When my mum passed away, I actually got to see her about a quarter of an hour afterwards, and the care home were very, very nicely laid her to rest to a degree of a rose. And it had it was very personal.
It was
unfortunately the other side of that for me, and I wasn't really prepared for that. Is when my dad passed away, I was there very soon.
Yeah.
And they never actually had time to prepare him for me. And we have to understand that there is a stage of death as well as life. So. A funeral director will be able to advise you, and I think it's very key to ask us our advice. And you mentioned post-mortems. I mean, a good funeral director will always advise a family whether visiting is a good idea or not, and then, you know, and then take information from us. That's the best thing I would say.
Yeah, good. And I think you need advice then. I mean, my own experience was not good, as I say, because I visited my father something like about 7 or 8 days after he passed, and it wasn't a good experience. So some people might be afraid of what their loved one would look like after they've died, and I suppose you do need the experience and understanding of a good funeral director to advise you. Yeah,
I think that's exactly right, Bobby.
Yeah. Okay, if the care home organised the removal to a local funeral director during the night, can the family have their loved one moved to their preferred funeral director?
Absolutely.
Yep.
What happens, again, if it's a care home and something does happen at night where they don't have the facilities to look after your loved one, they will ask a local funeral director to bring them into their care.
Yep.
That does not necessarily mean that's the funeral director that you use as a family.
Okay.
The only difference will be is if there is that, the funeral director that actually brought them into their care on the first instance would probably put a charge on that. They call it a removal charge.
Obviously.
And that's about £175 on average.
Right, okay. What about the actual funeral date? How long on average is it after the death that you get a date for a cremation or burial?
Again, I'll use averages. First of all, there is never a rush. Families don't need to be in a position where they feel as if they have to do something very quickly. That's a normal reaction, but it's not the case.
Yeah.
I would say for a burial, you really need 7 days for all the paperwork to be done, and obviously to organise the actual church and everything. About 10 days for a cremation. But the funeral directors really should have to inquire, first of all, if the minister or the officiant can run the service, if you have a particular minister you want.
Okay.
And obviously, we have to speak to the churches and the crematoriums to make sure the dates are available.
Right, okay, lovely. I have often seen family members carry the coffin into a church or crematorium chapel. How do you arrange for that to happen? Is that okay to do?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Again, it's quite a passion of me to make sure that family members can vocalise what they want to do on the funeral. At Secure Haven, if any family member or all family members want to become the bearers, we make sure that on the day we are standing with them, because they can change their mind last minute. So sure. We always have one of our gentlemen to move in. It's not done by all funeral directors, but I think it should be. It's something that could be very personal and passionate for someone to be able to bear their loved one into a church or a crematorium.
Okay, Paul. Well, thanks very much. Difficult subject, but it's one that we all need to be looking at. And that was very interesting and very informative. So thank you. You'll be back on Phoenix FM on the 1st of March with Michelle Ward on Eat My Brunch. And if you're listening, we'd love to have your questions. And the topic this time, I think, is going to be on cremations, I believe, Paul. Is that right?
Absolutely. Cremations and crematorium. There are quite a few myths out there that we'll try to dispel if we can.
Lovely. Okay. Well, if you'd like to ask a question, please email the studio on radio@phoenixfm.com. I'll give you that again. It's radio@phoenixfm.com. And Paul, thank you very much. That's Paul Yarwood from Secure Haven Independent Funeral Directors. Would you just like to give us some contact details if, in case anyone would like to get in touch with you?
Of course. The website is www.securehaven.co.uk, and you can contact me, Kate, or Cheryl on 01277 356 857.
Thanks very much, Paul. Look forward to your return visit on the 1st of March. And we're going to finish with a bit of Monty Python, I think. Another tune from the Top 10 Funeral Chart 2016.
Some things in life are bad, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the